Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. This week we have on Tom Joslin from the Foundations for Defense of Democracy, also with the Long War Journal. Tom is an expert on everything in the Middle East, especially with terrorism. This week, I wanted to bring Tom back on because there is a growing concern with Iran and the Iranian regime's activities in the Gulf. We recently have seen the attack on two oil tankers just in the past days. So with that said, Tom, can you help our listeners understand what is going on with the Iranian regime? What attacks are they responsible for? I know that Secretary Pompeo and the Trump administration they've come out and blatantly said, directly stated that Iran is responsible for the bombings of these and mining of these oil tankers. What should we be watching right now, Tom?
Well, you know, I think it's important to put it into the context of we see actions, not just the attacks on the oil tankers, but we're seeing attacks inside Saudi Arabia being launched by the Iranian-backed Houthis in Yemen. And we're seeing attacks in Iraq that may very well be and are suspected of being the work of Iranian-backed Shiite militias. And when you put those three together, you start to get a sense of how Iran has expanded its reach throughout the Middle East over time. Its terrorist tentacles have grown longer and thicker, and it's able to commit these types of attacks because it has more capabilities now than it's had in quite some time in terms of being able to lash out at its perceived opponents and civilians and others. And, you know, this is all in the context, of course, where for a long time, for several years, in fact, Iran, basically, the world was going its way in the Middle East. It had a clear path to expand its presence throughout the region with little sort of concerted pushback whatsoever. In fact, you know, I think some of the actions taken by the U.S. government and our allies sort of paved the way for Iran to expand its presence and its strength throughout the Middle East. The Trump administration came in and decided it was going to eventually launch this maximum pressure campaign, which was to try and sort of put a chokehold on Iran's finances to prevent Iran from financing its regional destabilization efforts and activities, and also to sort of muster support for rolling back Iran's sort of proxy army that it's built throughout the Middle East and really around the world. They have terrorist tentacles around the world. And so now you're seeing Iran lash out because it's not getting things to go its way. It's not being given a free, sort of unfettered access throughout the region, and there's sort of a concerted effort to push back on them. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of skepticism in the press about whether or not Iran was really behind these attacks on the oil tankers, whether or not, who's behind these rocket and strikes in Iraq and other issues. I think it's very important to get the precise details and the intelligence on all that, but I think it's pretty obvious that the prime suspect is Iran.
So, Tom, you talked about the tentacles of the Iranian regime. I often say that the Iranian regime is the largest state sponsor of terrorism globally. So you've just discussed what they've done recently, things that they're trying to do in the Gulf to upset things and cause chaos and problems. Can you walk our listeners through the tentacles? Where do they reach? Can you explain the reach into Lebanon and to Hamas and to Yemen and walk our listeners through that?
Sure. Well, you know, I think it's important to start all the way back in the early 1980s to understand that Iran was really a pioneer in anti-American and anti-Israeli terrorism, and that really a lot of the tactics and styles of modus operandi they use in terrorist attacks all the way back then that they adopted were later picked up by Sunni groups as well to come after the U.S. and Israel. But Iran has sort of prioritized, terrorist groups as sort of one of their main proxy weapons against their enemies because it's a cheap form of sort of asymmetric warfare. And they've done this throughout the existence of the Iranian regime. That's been one of their preferred methods for striking out at their enemies. And unfortunately, during the course of what I call the 9/11 wars, the wars launched after the September 11th hijackings, Iran has expanded its regional power and its reach through these proxies, including in Iraq, where we took out Saddam and then didn't really roll back Iran. In fact, Iran was able to increase its presence in Iraq And then in Syria during the course of the multi-sided war there and the uprisings there, you know, with the war from these different groups, including Sunni jihadi groups against the Bashar al-Assad's regime, Assad gets destabilized and he calls on Russia and Iran to increase their presence in Syria to sort of save him. And so now we have Iranian proxies in Syria, greatly outnumbering anything they've had in the past. Of course, this all started in Lebanon, where Hezbollah is sort of the Iranian-backed proxy in Lebanon. I describe it as a foreign virus that was injected into Lebanese society and has taken hold and has sort of grown stronger over time and has compromised the situation there greatly. But Iran is also willing to work with Sunni groups. You know, it's not just Shiite groups that are sort of share the same ideological or theological worldview. They've worked with groups like Hamas that they've sponsored against Israel, and of course Hamas is a Sunni group. They've actually cut deals with the Taliban in Afghanistan. You know, one of the things that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has sort of been criticized for recently is he blamed this recent attack in Kabul on Iran. Now, the Taliban claimed that attack. I think he should have said that the Taliban claimed that attack and was responsible for it. But he intimated that sort of Iran was really responsible. And what I would say about that is I don't have any specifics on that attack. I can't tell you if Iran had a hand in it. Pompeo claims that there's some more intelligence that would indicate that. But overall, in general, there's no doubt that Iran has worked with the Taliban in Afghanistan against us and our allies. There's a whole slew of evidence in that vein. And Iran also has this complicated relationship with al-Qaeda, where they've harbored senior al-Qaeda leaders, another complex and controversial issue. But the bottom line is that Iran, when you look at their behavior over the course of decades, they're willing to prioritize working with terrorist groups, terrorist organizations, paramilitary, using paramilitary or guerrilla warfare as a means to achieve their end. And unfortunately, they've greatly expanded their guerrilla, their insurgent capacity across these different countries since 9/11.
So when you look at the map, you take the tentacles, Iran into Afghanistan. We've talked before, Tom, you've been really good about talking about how Iran was really a pipeline for al-Qaeda. A lot of people didn't believe that the Iranians were working with al-Qaeda. That's something for another day. We've talked about it on a previous episode, but something the Obama administration hid from the American people. But as you head west from Iran into Iraq, where you had Kurds, Sunnis, Shias, we allowed, the United States and our allies, wrongfully allowed, through probably no fault of our own except just having the wrong plan and implementing the wrong plan after the Iraq war and after the fall of Saddam Hussein. So they've now stretched their tentacles into Iraq, where they control most of the governing bodies. And then you stretch across into Syria to the west. Now they control the Assad government. It's more complicated for them there because you have the Russians. And then, of course, Syria into Lebanon, which is the Holy Grail, because in Lebanon, and we'll finish with this, Tom, how many weapons and what type of weapons now are sitting in Lebanon under the control of Hezbollah? Where can they reach, and what should we be watching for any attacks on Israel?
You know, I mean, I think they've greatly expanded their rocket capacity throughout the region, their missile capacity, and this is the main thing to worry about is the way they can deliver warheads now. It's not really my bailiwick, my field of expertise, to be honest with you, but I think it's pretty obvious that they've expanded their paramilitary or insurgency capacity across the region. And one of the things, you know, a couple of my colleagues recently wrote a paper, just I think it was just released today, about the land bridge that Iran has formed through Iraq into Syria and utilizing resources in Lebanon as well. And what's problematic about this, of course, is that one of the things that happened during the fight against ISIS in Iraq is that after America drew down in Iraq under the Obama administration, basically Iranian-backed forces ended up being the boots on the ground that did a lot of the fighting against ISIS. And what that did was it strengthened Iran's hand in Iraq even further. And so what's happened is that as a consequence of American policy, and I would say short-sightedness, and the fact that we're not really willing to stick with any of these fights long term, what's happened is that Iran has been able to take advantage of that for its own purposes and greatly expand its sort of capacity in the Middle East.
Yeah, and that's the capacity we talk about. Is it that I like that term that you use, that they've created a land bridge from Iran all the way that stretches across to the Mediterranean. And that's the capability, either through direct capability, Quds force, or forces that they're supporting that are essentially, as I think you call the paramilitary forces. And then what was before in Lebanon were weapon systems that were really, in a lot of ways, old-fashioned. They just launch kind of homemade weapons over the lob them over the border. They couldn't reach all the way to Tel Aviv. But what we've seen more recently is the capability. It looks to be even some type of possibly even GPS capability, so they're able to hit targets that they couldn't do before. So all this continues to be a problem in the Middle East. Tom, the latest article that came out, that can be found at the Long War Journal. Is that correct?
Actually, I think there's one at the Foundation for Defense Democracy. If you go to their Twitter handle, at FDD, there's a PDF you can download on the LandBridge, work on the LandBridge.
You can read that at Foundations for Defense of Democracy. Tom Jocelyn, it's always great to have you on to bring us the good news in the Middle East.
Yeah, always good news. Thanks, Devin.
This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We've started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. We the people, free and strong, fight through the dark night toward the dawn. Freedom marches on. Afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
With a prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.